and welcome back to the While We're Waiting Hope After Child Loss podcast. I'm Jill Sullivan, your host and one of the co-founders of the While We're Waiting ministry. We're so glad you've joined us for another episode. A few weeks ago, I had the great privilege of visiting with my friends Dan and Kristen Naylor. I first met them when they attended our While We're Waiting weekend in Maryland in the summer of 2019 and had the opportunity to hear the story of their precious daughter Abby, who was unexpectedly born into the arms of Jesus at 39 weeks gestation. Since her birth, they have become strong advocates for stillbirth and infant loss awareness. I believe you will be blessed by their testimony, and I'm so pleased to share our conversation with you today. Hey, Dan and Kristen, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today.
Hi, Jill. Thanks so much for having us.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome. I've been looking forward to visiting with y'all ever since we set this up, so I'm happy that y'all are here. So let's get started by just giving you the opportunity to tell a little bit about yourselves. I know you've gone through some kind of major life changes here lately with a big move and all, so tell us a little bit about where you're from and what life is like for you there.
Yeah, we have recently moved from Philadelphia to Indiana, where I grew up, recently being like 6 weeks ago. So we are finding our legs here and, you know, we're all locked down here because of COVID. So it's kind of hard to do a move and then we're just stuck here in the house. But Dan grew up in the Philadelphia area, and that's where we met and got married, and I lived there for 20 years. So wow. Here we are in Indiana, and we are just, you know, about a year ago, we decided this is where we wanted to raise our family. And so COVID came and kind of put all those plans on hold, but here we are. So we're excited to be here and kind of anxious to, you know, get out and get ourselves established here.
Right. Yeah. With COVID and all, you can't even really go out and visit churches or get to know your neighbors or anything like that.
Exactly.
So that's got to be pretty challenging.
Big challenge. Yeah.
Yeah. This last weekend, we were acknowledging that we're starting the process. We've been listening to some local sermons, you know, just on the Sundays, trying to get a feel for some of the local churches. And you know, in the meantime, we're figuring out schools for our kids, and, you know, our younger son is in preschool age. And so we were trying to find a preschool locally, and there was one that got good ratings, you know, got good feedback that was also associated with a church. And so we opted to go to church. And on the drive back, we were acknowledging, like, that was literally the first time in a year that we went to church together.
Wow.
You know, to say we went to, obviously we did lots of.
Yeah,
podcasts, but or the live sermon streams,
right?
But it was just an interesting experience. It was actually really, it felt very natural, felt very comfortable, you know, in masks and everything. But
right,
it was wonderful to be back in a church space together.
Yeah, it's amazing how much has changed just over the last year.
Yeah,
how it's almost became a way of life. Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm glad y'all have gotten settled in there and closer to grandparents and that kind of thing. So I know that's great for your family. So you have four children, two boys and two girls.
Yep.
Let's start out by just letting you kind of tell us a little bit about your boys.
We have two boys, 1 4 and 1 5. 4-year-old is Eli. 5-year-old is Isaac. Isaac, you know, we've had just about every different type of birth experience as you could possibly have, you know, and started off as a bit of a shocker. We didn't know how much of a interesting story it was until after the fact, but he was a preemie. He was 31 week preemie, 2 pounds 9 ounces.
Wow.
Came out strong, came out, you know, fiery, and fairly quickly, you know, he was on oxygen, he was in the NICU, he had all the fixings of a really small newborn, because he was really small for his gestational age. But he was strong and fiery little guy. And so spent 5 weeks in the NICU and came home. All we were doing is waiting for him to get big enough to leave, because, yeah, he was, you know, a 2.5 pound, you know, little child, self-sufficient little child. You know, and so it had all the experiences of it and came home and didn't really know any different until after the fact. You realize that was a bit of a difficult experience. And, you know, which led us to, you know, our second boy. You know, it was also a really difficult process getting pregnant. And so, you know, when we decided, all right, we're going to try again, it was, we weren't quite sure if we were ready or not, but it took us so long to get pregnant the first time. We figured, like, all right, we have a bit of a run-up right. time. It didn't take too long.
Yeah.
So it brought us to Eli, who was about as normal a pregnancy experience as you could possibly have. You know, and coming out of the first, it was, you know, it came with a lot of anxiety. You just didn't know.
Oh, sure.
Kristen had a lot of complications. Isaac had complications, and, you know, to go into the second one, you kind of carry that anxiety throughout the process, but he was about as sure. normal and natural as can be. And, he came out normal size, you know, perfect little guy. You know, some of the first inclinations of his personality, you're like, oh, this guy is going to be a Spitfire. And 4 years later, sure enough, his early personality is reflective of his current personality. So they're very, you know, very different boys from each other, both absolutely mm-hmm. as sweet as can be, both funny, engaging. Isaac is very sensitive, very sweet, very loving and caring. And Eli has some of those, but he's just very, like, fiercely independent, fiercely strong-willed, mm-hmm. as goofy as they could possibly yeah. come. I mean, you don't really think about, like, when do kids get, like, get senses of humor. I mean, it's like as early as they can start communicating, he was laughing and making jokes, and it's just continued and become more complex. And he's just a funny little guy.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, as you know, we'll get to our, you know, daughters and, you know, Olive, yeah. who's about 6 months now, like just to see how good of brothers and how loving of brothers mm-hmm. they are in very different ways.
Mm-hmm.
Eli yeah. is very interested in interacting with her and trying to like make her laugh and giving her a quick hug. And then wants to move, go on and do his thing. Isaac wants to like love on her and come over and give her kisses. And, you know, it's just, there was like aspects of each one of their personalities coming out in very, very unique and interesting ways. But they're wow. unbelievable boys. Unbelievable.
Yeah. Wow. Sounds like they just have such big personalities, yet they're such unique individuals.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So, yeah, very cool. So we did mention that you have two girls, mm-hmm. and I would like for you just now to tell us a little bit about your sweet Abby.
Yeah. So Abby's our third. We were on the fence about even having a third child. And so when we got pregnant, it was a little like, oh, it wasn't that immediate excitement that we had with the boys. We were like, oh boy, we were about to have three kids under 3.5 years old. So it was more feeling overwhelmed at the thought of all
yeah.
that. But when we found out we were having a girl, it really shifted for us. You know, it just was so different. The thought of like, you know, adding a girl to the mix with the brothers and, just everything, buying all the pink everything and the ruffles. And, you know, you walk yeah. through the girls section and I'm like, oh my goodness, that whole thing. So we were really, really excited to add a girl to our family. And for the most part, my pregnancy was pretty healthy. I have some high risk factors, like I had a high blood pressure with Isaac. I got preeclampsia. So they were watching me closely, you know, and sure. I'm a fan. Like, give me all the extra appointments, all the extra scans. I'll take it. That's mm-hmm. fine. Like, to me, it's just like, okay, they're really trying not to miss anything. So it was a pretty smooth sailing, like I said, until 38 weeks. So when I was 38 weeks, I took my blood pressure at home like I did regularly, and I got a really high reading. And so I called the nurse and she said, come on in, we're going to just take a look, you know, make sure everything's okay. So Dan and I are there driving to the hospital thinking like, what's the protocol here? Like, I'm already high risk. Are they just going to deliver this baby today? Like, are we having a mm-hmm. baby? And you know, and we got there, and of course, my blood pressure never spiked. They monitored me. They monitored Abby. Everything was totally fine. They gave me a little bit of fluid and sent us home, you know, and mm-hmm. we come from this mindset when you have a kid in the NICU, you know, they kind of, ingrain it in you, like every day in the womb matters, like every day, every week, every, you know, you want them in there cooking as long as they can. Like they're getting something from mom being in there. So we were kind of like, all right, cool. Like, you know, we didn't have a baby today. She's all good. We're good. And our perspective also because of Isaac is very skewed. You know, we had this 31 weeker who just did so well. So we just think, oh, every, you know, to us, like once we pass 31 weeks, like we're home free.
Sure.
So it was 1 week later, I was 39 weeks. And our C-section was planned for 3 days later. So our C-section was planned for July 17th. And on July 13th of 2018, I went to my OB for my final check. And it was just a simple, you know, weight, blood pressure, everything okay, whatever, and then see you later. Like that was just, it was a quick appointment. Dan went to work that day in the morning. And so I was, you know, just chatting it up with the doctor and then everything's fine. And the medical student was with him that day and she brought the Doppler over and started scanning my belly for the heartbeat, which they always find right away.
Yeah.
And she was not finding that heartbeat right away. And in my head, I'm not too concerned yet because I'm telling myself it's just a medical student, you know, she probably doesn't know what she was doing.
Right.
And it was more my own coping mechanism of trying not to, you know, have a full panic attack basically. Right. And so, but she's like, she's looking worried. She's going all around and I'm in my head. I'm just like, what is going on? Like they always pick it up so early. This is a big baby, you know,
she's
7 pounds. Like,
right.
And the doctor's kind of like, try over there. And then he kind of just comes over and takes over. And he's like, when's the last time you felt her move? And she's been active. Right. And, you know, he's nervous. And I was like, I felt her move like on the way to the appointment, you know, her movement had changed to me, but it wasn't anything that I was concerned about, you know, babies are bigger, their movements change in the womb. And
exactly. Yes.
I'm just mentally like trying to hold it together still, you know, I'm trying not to go down those roads because we live in this world that like 39 week babies don't die for no reason. Like, and so he's like, I'm going to stop and like, let's go around the corner to the ultrasound machine. So we went around the corner and it was early in the morning, so they had to turn on the machine and I'm just laying there flat on the table and I have my hand over my face and he's standing above me like looking at me and looking at the screen and a few nurses are in the room and I just am like, I just already knew, like I just knew, and I was just waiting for them to like say it basically. So he said, yep, there's no heartbeat. Like, I'm so sorry. And it's just like, it's just this, the life just goes out of you, you know, like it. And it's just, I'd say like, even to this day, it's like sometimes hard to believe. So starting at that moment, you're like, you keep telling yourself, like, cause I'm pregnant. I have, you know, like, what do you mean? Like she died. It's like, you can't believe it. You can't believe it, you know? And anyway, so I had to call Dan who was at work. I told him over the phone, which was like terrible. There's like a whole list of things that were like pretty much the worst thing you've ever done. And that was one of them. And eventually he met me at the hospital and, our parents came and our pastor came and we had to wait that day because I was having a C-section and I had eaten breakfast that morning. So we were just there at the hospital kind of waiting for enough time to pass so they could do the surgery. And so, so it was that afternoon, 3:48 PM, Abby was born. Mm-hmm. Like I said, there was another layer of acceptance during the C-section, as like, I think both of us had held out some kind of hope that they were wrong.
Sure.
You know, we didn't see our baby who had died. So it was like, maybe they were wrong. You know, we also prayed like maybe God was going to bring her back to life. And like, we were not counting that out as an option. Like maybe he would do that. And it's just such a dichotomy of trying to grasp reality and believe in the God of miracles. And, you know, but at some point during the C-section, we knew that she was born and she was laying over there and not crying, you know, and it was like just all we could do to like just get through the surgery. After the C-section was over, and we had a little bit of time, Dan left the room and he saw her. And I remember later being in the recovery room just a short while later. And, you know, they had prepared us that we would be able to see her and spend time with her if that's what we wanted to do, mm-hmm. which I'm really, really grateful that our culture has changed and they allow and encourage stillbirth families to spend time and see their babies, because it meant everything to us. Yes. And so Dan said, yes, I saw her and she is beautiful. Mm. And so I took a big breath and said, yes, I want to see her. And so they put her on my lap and I just I couldn't breathe. She was just the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. She was perfect. Yeah. She had brown curly hair and long fingers and long toes and full lips. And she was perfect. 6 pounds, 14 ounces, 19 inches long, like, which was actually like also a heartbreaking thing that like, this wasn't a sick baby. Right. She was perfectly healthy, you know? And it was just like my body that had failed her. And so she died of a cord accident, hypercoiled umbilical cord. The cord got twisted around on itself and they basically said it was kind of a freak thing. At first it was hard to know that like, that's what happened, but in the end, I think we are glad that we kind of know what happened, because that's one thing we've learned about stillbirth is a lot of stillbirth families don't have answers to what happened.
Wow.
And why a baby in such a late gestation just dies. And so, in the end, we spent about 36 hours with her. Our hospital had a cooling cot, cuddle cot. Mm-hmm. So that's, a device that helps preserve the baby's body. So it affords parents the gift of time to spend with their baby. And so in our culture, you know, it's like, feels like a morbid thing to be spending time with your baby that died, but it was the most beautiful, precious gift that we will probably ever have in our life. And
absolutely.
We're so thankful that we have that. And we have some photos and, you know, no matter what amount of time, no matter how many photos we took, like it would never be enough, but we're thankful that we did get to have that time with her. It was so precious. And our families came and met her and held her and kissed her, and some friends came. And I even remember like a moment of like sitting around, like having a laugh with our friends. I don't even know what it was about, but it's just like felt normal. Like,
yeah, it was an important, like for us, it was that experience, you know, reflecting on how, like what we've come to recognize is so many people who have suffered stillbirths, who have suffered miscarriages that are grieve and are in the process. The hardest part, you know, and what was so important to us is that it all didn't happen in a vacuum. It was important to us that our parents got to meet her, that our friends
Absolutely.
Got to meet her,
yeah.
that more people than just us knew her.
Like she was real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because she was, you know, and so being able to be given that gift of time, with Abby and with our friends. And like Kristen said, like there was a, you know, you go through those probably just like any other grieving process. There's so many complicated emotions around it, but there was moments in it that it felt very precious to us and very mm-hmm. comfortable, and a gift that we got, that we were able to sit with our friends and talk, and for them to be able to see her and meet her. And it felt just like she said, like there was moments that we found ourselves laughing, not because yeah. it was the grief ended, but because it was that small gift of normalcy yeah. in the experience of having a child that we were blessed with.
It's the complicating factor of you spend your whole 40 weeks being pregnant to like see that face, you yes. know, to meet that baby. And we had that and the moment of seeing our child deceased at the same time. And the complication and the trauma of that is just like, it's still hard to understand, to wrap our heads and hearts around.
Yeah. You know, it's so hard for me to imagine because that's just outside my experience, but just listening right. to you talk, it just, you know, it's just opening up my understanding a little bit more of the whole thing. And I never thought about this before, but I love how your family and friends got to meet her and that they will always remember her, you know, that she's mm-hmm. actually a part of their lives because they had the opportunity to meet her.
Yeah. I love that. That's so special to us because when we went home from the hospital, we said goodbye to her and we went back to our life just the same as it was before with our two boys.
Yeah.
There was no little sister right. there, you know, and it was almost like, did we just imagine that whole thing? Like, was she really here? Or it was like this weird, you know, joke or something that she just was gone then,
yeah.
you know, and it's like, yeah. So that time and that she was so real to the others too, was like very special and meaningful.
Yeah. How did your little boys do with the loss of Abby? I'm sure they had been excited about baby yeah. sister coming home.
Yeah, they were so young. So Isaac, yeah. our oldest, was just not even 3.5. And mm-hmm. then Eli was like 20 months. So mm-hmm. Eli did not understand at all.
Right.
And Isaac, you know, we had a few great conversations with our pediatrician. And before, you know, it all happened so, so fast. And then, you know, so she's like, her best advice was be honest, keep it concrete and simple. You know, you don't say, oh, the baby was too sick to come home. You say
right.
her heart stopped and she died and she's with Jesus. I mean,
yeah.
and he was kind of like, okay, let's play motorcycles, you know?
Right.
And then
yeah.
since then he's almost 6 now. And it's like watching them re-grieve as they learn more and can understand on a different level. Like, oh, she was actually born. Like I do have a sister and all that, you know? So it's like,
yeah.
it's like almost like new to them as they kind of come into this right. new stage of maturity, you know?
Yeah. There's even moments where, you know, there would be points of such like surprising clarity that mm-hmm. you're like, I can't believe you're understanding this so well. And then 2 hours later, like we'll be in an elevator and like Isaac, you know, there's other people that get in and Isaac turns to mommy like, mommy, you know, we're going to have a baby sister. Mommy, do you feel her kicking?
After she had died, he said that.
Wow.
You know, and yeah. but it's like within hours of him being able to articulate some like surprising understanding of like the meaning of death, the experience sure. of it. Like, yeah, Abby's in heaven and it's okay.
Right.
You know, it just, you see their brains processing it. And I just, they've continued to understand with a bit more detail and a bit more clarity as right. they've gotten older, what it has meant and,
yeah.
you know, and who she is. But yeah, those early stages, it was a continual process of mm-hmm. helping them to understand it.
Yeah, And I'm sure it will be an ongoing process, you know, in the years to come, probably presenting you guys just some unique parenting challenges and, and knowing how to deal with those questions as they arise. You know, it seems like so often when a baby goes to heaven, so much of the focus is on the mom, and that's very understandable because, you know, the mom's the one that carries the baby, the mom's the one that gives birth. But I always feel like in situations like this, the dad tends to get overlooked. So, Dan, would you talk about your experience with that, if that was the case for you, and how you dealt with that?
Yeah. I dealt with it perfectly. I'll say that.
Of course.
No, you always wish that's the case.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's an interesting topic, and it's an interesting commentary on the whole birth experience, you know, because I would actually say that the focus on the dad or the lack thereof is not as much just a reflection of like the loss experience. It's reflective, you know, from a medical side, of every pregnancy, because every pregnancy has very much been like mirrored each other, and the loss is no different, but the loss was felt far more personally, I think, that, you know, I'm at the end of the day, I can be neglected as we're having our children, because I know I'm going home with them. But as we're in the hospital and the focus is on the mom, and rightly so, and the attention is on her, and rightly so, there was a very distinct feeling as doctors are coming in and like talking through like what the experience is and what choices we would like to make and how you like what's the process going to be. Very much like I'm this weird, like I feel a presence here, you know, but I'm just not going to focus on you. I'm not going to look at you. And, and it was far more difficult to deal with that with Abby than it was with the, with the other birth experiences. And, you know, and that's just in the hospital. You know, and the acknowledgement is that I recognize, on a rational side, you know, I can, for good or bad, I can always see both sides of it. And I understand on the rational side that there are so many complicated situations that come into the hospital with every pregnancy, every birth, that, you know, there's one of two people that are definitely in the center. Like, there's no question that the mom is the mom. There is some question that whether the dad is the dad. And so I'm like, there's no denying that. But as you're sitting there just like broken, holding our daughter, you know, and to feel the neglect on that side. And I'm not saying like it was never intentional. I think it was literally just built into the staff that the mom is to have the focus. The mom is the patient. The dad is there, you know, whether it's the dad or not, we don't know. And so we're just going to treat him as though he's there. That was a difficult process. It was like, I'm not going to say that like there wasn't anything malicious. There wasn't anything like actively against. It just was a negligence there that carried beyond. Because even like coming home, that was very much the same experience. That as people were coming and bringing gifts, as people were making calls, it was all like, oh, here Kristen, here's like something to remember her by. Here we were thinking about Abby, and Kristen, here's something.
And they would ask, like, how's Kristen doing?
How's Kristen? Like, they'd ask me, how's Kristen doing?
I wondered if you got
know?
That.
And I'm like, of course I'm going to answer, and of course it matters. And I'm like, of course I'm thankful. But I like, there is key conversations and key people that I distinctly remember, because it was a shorter list, a significantly shorter list of people that made it a point to, like, Dan, how are you doing? Dan, like, here's, I was thinking about you, and here's something that I got that it was like felt meaningful to get to you at this point. It was rare. It was rare, you know. And I think, you know, on some level, I will acknowledge it's a bit of a double-edged sword, because as a man, we struggled to deal with the vulnerability. We struggled to deal with the honesty. We struggled to you know, it's take it as my role to take care of my family. So even as I go home, like, even the people that are asking about us and coming, stopping by and giving attention to Kristen. Like, I also recognize that I switched into, like, I need to take care of my family. I need to be strong. I need to, like, there are so many things that take priority in the journey, and my emotions are at the bottom of that list, you know? And so, like, even as I experience emotions, it's after getting done everything else that needs to get done through the day, because we still have two kids that we had to care about, and we still had a house that we need to care for, and clothes to wash, and dishes to make, or dishes to clean, and food to make, and, you know, and so, and work, you know, I have to, like, after a couple of weeks, I have to turn it off and go to work.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think for good and bad, like, I did it to myself as much as, you know, it was as much an internal switch that, that projected to people that, like, Dan's okay. Dan's okay. Like, Dan is not okay.
Right.
But Dan doesn't know how to turn that off.
Yeah.
You know, not that I like talking about myself in the third person, but so many, I think so many husbands, so many fathers have that mechanism that we, like, in the app, I can't control anything around me that, like, from an emotional standpoint, I can't control, I can't stop any of this. But what I can do is make everything else function okay.
Yeah.
What I can do is take the burden of life off of everyone else around me so that they can be present, you know? And that's, I think I very much did that,
like,
to my own detriment and to the, like, I think our family got through it well, but it was an interesting cycle, that, you know, all of the emotions that were repressed, all the emotions that I didn't process through came flooding out months later, you know, and I went through a full breakdown, you know, and so it was, I don't know how we could have done it better, if we could have done it better, whatever it was necessary to, but, you know, it was just an interesting like journey that, you know, like, as the father feeling somewhat overlooked, resenting that, but doing it to myself, and then recognizing much later when no one else is around that, oh my God, I need help.
Yeah. Cause you can't maintain that forever.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, thank you for sharing so honestly about that. I think that's something that, I think it's important that the dad is, that the role of the dad is honored and, as seen as vital in this, and that the dad needs as much care as the mom does, you know?
Yeah.
And, I don't think our society looks at it that way.
Right.
So thank you for sharing that. I think that's going to be helpful to a lot of people that listen to this podcast. A lot of dads probably find themselves in the exact same position that you described there. So I think that's going to be helpful. So it was about a year and a half after Abby went to heaven, right? That you guys got a little surprise and found out you were expecting again. So talk about what pregnancy is like for both mom and dad after having a stillborn baby.
Yeah. We don't recommend it. No, just a bad joke.
Yeah, terrible joke.
Yeah,
but there's a lot of honesty in that joke.
Oh yeah,
anxiety. From day one to well past the final day.
Yeah,
anxiety.
Yeah,
I think a lot of families in our situation will have another baby. You know, there's a lot you talk about. Some people hate it. Some people like the term the rainbow baby.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you lose a baby, there's that feeling like you want to have another baby. And one of the first hurdles is, like, this baby is not a replacement for the baby that we've lost. You know, Abby is number three. This is number four, you know, and then another, maybe the next hurdle is everybody from the outside. I mean, I use everybody very loosely, but thinking, oh, everything's okay now. You have another baby.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like I wanted to push back on that with all my might. And, you know, nope, we have all the grief. We have all the heartache. We have all the loss and everything. And now we have another baby that's on the way. And, so just the complication of, you know, going through the pregnancy. And, you know, for me with this fourth pregnancy, things were, so I always have excess amniotic fluid, and I was getting these same exact things happening that I, you know, I wonder if that was a factor in Abby's cord accident. And I'm like, I've learned so much about stillbirth and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Too much, probably. Yes, so, too much. Yeah. So yeah. I mean, and also with a stillbirth mom, you know, I've essentially like lost the ability to trust my own body. Oh, they sure. say, you know, when you're pregnant, you say, mother knows, mom's intuition. You know, guess what? I had no idea that my baby had died, that anything was wrong. Like, I just didn't know. So with my next pregnancy, I can literally convince myself that something's wrong every hour of the day.
Oh, sure.
Like, yeah. So it's like, I wanted to just live my whole life in the hospital, because I'm like, I mean, I didn't do that, but I just couldn't know when things were not okay. And when I was fine, when I was overreacting, when I wasn't, you know, we couldn't even let ourselves dream that maybe this baby would actually get to come home with us. Yeah. We couldn't even picture a life of like with that baby coming home.
Right.
We didn't imagine what it would be like for the boys to meet her, because it was too painful. We couldn't put out the clothes. We couldn't buy the things. We did the bare minimum.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, we had a pack of, you know, 18 newborn diapers or whatever, but when she was born, and you know, also it was our fourth child, so it's like, oh well, you know, we'll just figure out, you don't need all that stuff, right, we know. Yeah. But yeah, you get the idea. We barely made it through, and we were so thankful. So for this pregnancy, we needed to change OBs. Some people, I know other rainbow pregnancies who they want to stay with the same team, and I totally get that. For us, we needed a change of scenery.
Sure.
It was too triggering. So that was a great decision for us. And that team also committed to seeing how much anxiety we were going through. And so she was also born early, partially because of the anxiety, and the ACOG, the Gynecological Association, I'm totally butchering the name, has updated their guidelines for stillbirth families. So that 37 weeks, due to maternal anxiety, they are willing to deliver babies and induce moms at that time.
Yeah, and that sounds like a really good idea to me. You know,
yes.
Yeah. I would just trying to put myself in your shoes, I would just be so ready to give birth and just, you know,
just get her here.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. And again, like going back to Isaac, our first experience, like, you know, we know that after 31 weeks, she'll be fine. We don't know at any time whether she will be fine. Like, get her out, because at least then we can control the environment.
A baby in the baby in the NICU,
yeah,
is much better option than a stillborn baby.
Yeah, I know for a lot of families, that idea, I'm like, oh, the baby's in the NICU. It's like, it's great.
Yeah,
it's great.
Yeah,
100%.
We'll take that.
But fortunately, Olive was healthy. Olive was fine.
She was born early too, right, Olive?
Yep.
She was.
Okay. And spent a little time in the NICU?
She did not.
No.
Wow.
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes. We were really nervous about that, but yeah, she did not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Olive Elizabeth is her name. Mm-hmm. So tell me, how did you choose that name? That's an unusual name.
So, yes, we have, all of our kids have vowels. And so we've also never named a child before they've been born. So we waited to see Isaac, Eli, and Abby. But with Olive, it was really different. And we knew her name months before she was born. So it has a reference based in Genesis 8 and the idea of Noah after 40 days and 40 nights enduring the storm, you know, on that ark. And you can only imagine what was going on inside of his storm, you know. And at the end of that time, he sent out the dove, who came back eventually with an olive branch. Yeah. And that was the symbol of peace for Noah. It was like, we're getting off this ark. We are starting a new life. And, you know, when we talk about extending an olive branch to people that we are fighting with, we're wanting to make peace with them. And so, you know, I think we fell in love with the name more so than, and then all the meaning kind of fell in behind it. And oh man, like a lot of, we also think of Abby as like the little birdie that flew away from our nest. And I'm like, she's the dove and olive is the branch, like mm-hmm. coming back to our home. And, you know, with olive came so many prayers that this season of life for us is full of something new and something like peaceful and just a new chapter for our family.
Yeah, I love that. Just that's beautiful. Thank you for that. All right, so it's been a little over 2.5 years now since Abby went to heaven, and I want you to think back to the very early days of your grief. What would you say to a newly bereaved parent, mom or dad, particularly someone who has endured infant loss or stillbirth? What kind of advice might you give them?
Oh, take your time. Be gracious with yourself. I mean, early on, we learned pretty quickly how differently we grieve, you know, and how much grace we needed to give to one another in him having his process and me having my process and not understanding that. And I think we have, in general, we have a very grief illiterate society.
We do.
And so we started on Grief Share, and we did a lot of grief work in counseling together as a couple, reading as much as we could, surrounding ourselves with other people who had lost pregnancy loss or lost children, and like just understanding grief on its most basic level was so helpful.
Yeah.
Like just something like, oh, I'm actually not going crazy because I can't even read a sheet of paper. Like I can't even go in the grocery store and remember 5 things. Like, no, I'm not going crazy. Right. I'm in grief.
Yep.
And like, simple things like that. Like we don't know those things as a culture. And right. So that when you're there in the worst moment of your life, you know, it's like, you have to get this whole education on grief just to get through, you know, but surrounding yourself, like grief, it takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of time and patience and grace.
Yes.
And it is a mountain. I mean, it is a giant mountain to climb, and it's never going to go away. And I've heard other people say similar things. You know, I went into this whole experience thinking grief was, oh, you have a terrible wound in your life, and then it just gets better and better and better and better and better, and then you're all better
right.
one day.
That's what I thought
and
too.
Now, yes. And none of us would ever say that now, you know?
Right.
And it doesn't mean that it's not going to get better.
Right.
It gets better and it gets different.
Yes.
You know, not better the way that I used to think of being all better, but it changes, and you get used to carrying this load, and you get used to having Abby who lives in heaven and what that looks like for our family and the, you know, and some days we laugh and joke around and we carry it lightly, and other days it still crushes us.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think a big piece, the whole grief experience, especially like leaving there, it's non-linear for either one of you. And there's no, like, you cannot define at any given time where either one of you are at.
Right.
you know, and a married like couple. And the biggest early fight, and I think the most important early fight, was to give grace to each other.
Yes.
To be exactly where we were at, and understanding that where each other were at was okay, regardless of whether it looked like a grief that we understood or not.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, there was those early stages, and I know a lot, like probably most parents that have lost children, or anybody who's lost anybody, like like you can't even articulate what you're feeling or why you're feeling certain ways and why you're responding in certain ways.
Right.
And early on, we struggled with that. We struggled with understanding each other, and I think it was a difficult process, but it was an important process to get to the point of acknowledging it's okay that I don't understand you.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's okay that you don't understand me.
Sure.
As long as we give each other the grace, not space, but grace, mm-hmm. to be wherever we're at. Because the last thing we needed to give each other was space. We needed to be connected.
Yeah.
We needed to be like close to each other. And so even as we're sitting on couches, and she's reading articles, trying to understand like the grief experience and how other parents are working through it. And I'm sitting on the couch looking at funny videos because I just need to laugh. I need to feel something different than what I'm feeling, you know, for the other 23 and a half hours of the day.
Sure.
Like, it's okay, uh-huh. that we were in different spots. And that was like,
I'm over there looking like, what are you doing looking at funny cat videos? Like, are you just over it or what? You know?
Yeah. You know, and it's like, you know, we got at each other until we realized like, that's just what we both need. Like, in my mind, I'm like, why are you continuing to sit there and just read article after article after article about grief? You know, and like, can't you just turn it, like, don't you need to turn it off? Right. And like, the reality is no, she didn't need to.
Yeah.
And on the flip side, yes, I absolutely needed to.
Yeah.
And it's okay.
Yes.
You know?
Right. Well, it sounds like y'all really communicated with each other well about what you needed. I mean, eventually, maybe not immediately. But yeah, you figured it out that was the key.
Oh, Jesus.
Yes. Communication and then grace, like you said, to be able to give each other permission to grieve the way you needed to grieve. Yeah. Very good. You know, I think it's really important for people to be aware that the grief of those who have lost little ones is just as profound as the grief of those of us who have lost older children. And I think that's something that our culture does not recognize. Could y'all talk about that a little bit?
Even like hearing you say that is so validating, because there's something that we wear that feels like our grief is less than, or our loss is less than. And I think some of it comes from the culture that we live in. Our culture doesn't say that we have a baby, have a third child. Abby does not have a birth certificate, even though she was 6 pounds and 14 ounces. Mm-hmm. You know, in some states, you don't have a tax credit because the baby wasn't born that year. I mean, it's a small thing, but when we were filing taxes later that year, it was like a slap in the face, you know?
Oh, sure.
They didn't acknowledge her life. So, and it comes, all those things come with this pervasive belief in our culture that people think because she didn't really live and she didn't take a breath outside of the womb, our loss doesn't hurt as much and that we've lost less or something. And to me, it sounds like, oh, well, then if your child died when they're 2, you lost less than when your child died when they're 10 or something. And like, how ridiculous that sounds. Like, exactly. That's not how love works. That's not how grief works either, you know? And I almost feel like it's the opposite. Like, we didn't get even one day. We didn't even get 1 year. We were so close. You know, we lost literally everything.
Yeah.
Everything. And so there's something that a pregnancy loss or a stillbirth family wears that feels like you're always trying to make your loss help others understand how valuable this child mm-hmm. is to us, how deeply wounded we are by this yeah. loss. To yeah. us, we lost a child in just the same way as we would if we had lost one of our child, our boys who was 4 or 5, or, right. or you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it feels, it continues to feel very much like a process of validation.
Yeah.
You know, that we have mm-hmm. to go through is, you know, and you know, the constant assessment, like, how do I communicate about Abby? How do I communicate about the loss, depending on who I'm talking to, and will they understand? And, you know, on the back of my mind, I want them to understand, but like, should I even care whether they understand?
Yeah.
Because it's true to us. It's real to us. And like, and but the fact that those conversations go on in our heads, it's frustrating. It can get overwhelming in those situations. And like, sure. I shouldn't be a process of questioning whether or not somebody can understand, will understand, will, you know, it's, but that's just a reality that we live in.
Yeah.
Of, you know, of a constant process yeah. of validation. Yeah. Just like we, you know, there is that inner turmoil of like, again, are we misunderstanding our own loss? Are like, should we be like mourning and grieving the way we are?
Mm.
You know, and you know, second guessing ourselves, or at least sure. I can speak to myself, second guessing myself. I'm like, am I crazy that I'm mm. struggling this much? Like, you know, and coming to terms and getting okay with the fact, like, yeah. no, it's not me that's broken in this situation.
Yeah.
It's what the message, which are what like society is saying to us. And the like, the way that they devalue the certain type of losses and not others is the problem,
right.
You know. And if there's anything that we can reinforce to people, I'm like, if you feel broken, lean into it, because how you feel is real, how you feel is true, and you know, like, and don't stuff it down, because it's going to be there regardless of where you put it. It's still there.
Right. Right. Yeah, you know, I look at our situation. We had Hannah for 17 and a half years, and I am so, so thankful for that time. I got to yeah. see her, you know, take her first steps and go to right. kindergarten and, you know, do all the things kids are supposed to do. And I feel so bad for parents like you who did not have that opportunity. That to yeah. me is, that's a huge loss. That's an immeasurable loss.
Yeah.
And it's a different kind of loss, but it is certainly not a lesser loss.
Right.
Yeah. There is no sense of equivalency. There's no sense of comparison. It's not like,
right.
There is no gradation of loss. Loss is loss right. is loss.
Yeah.
The fact that you had 17 and a half years doesn't change the fact that you haven't had every single day since then.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. and it's, yeah, there the second that just yeah. like everything else, there is no measure by which we compare.
Right.
It's loss.
Yeah.
And every single loss is devastating, and every single loss is impactful.
Yeah.
And it's, yeah. you know, it's just different. It's just a different journey.
Sure.
And I think there's also something like within the grief community, we don't feel that. I mean, people get no. it. There's yeah. You're not ranking griefs and right. deaths and pains anymore outside of the grief community. I used to always think like that. Oh, well, that my loss must have hurt more than that or whatever.
Yeah.
Just because of
did
my
too.
Weird.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And not on this side. Oh, no. Your pain right. is the worst pain you've ever felt. You lost your daughter. We lost ours. Like, you know, there's no winner here. I mean,
yeah.
exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
But on the flip side, what we've found in each other, and you know, what we found through our waiting and through grief share, like is our community of people that like, for this first time, we were able to walk in and just be ourselves.
Yes.
And be honest about who we were and be yes. honest about what we went through yes. without any sense of qualification, without any sense of judgment or concern. Like, we were just able to be honest about
right.
where we were at and what we were going through. And like, and it was, again, it's that crazy, like, it's the world that's telling us that there's a gradation. You enter into this community that none of us want to be a part of.
Right.
We're all thrust into this community But we find connection, we find support, we find encouragement, we find understanding.
Yes.
In it. And it's like, it's such a gift and an unexpected gift.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. We need to wrap up this conversation. So I want to ask you one more question. And that is, how are you seeking to live well while you're waiting to see Abby again?
Oh, I think it might sound very trite, but like, I'm not giving up on hope and I'm not giving up on joy, because there's a lot of what comes with child loss of just like wanting to throw in the towel and be done and not participate in life, you know? Yeah. And that's not like living well, and that's not what Christ has for our lives. And, right. You know, maybe some days it's okay to throw in the towel and
Absolutely.
Stay in bed. And when grief comes, like, it's okay. You know, it's okay to have those days or weeks or months or moments, especially in the beginning. Yes. But like, no, we want to believe in hope, and we want to live with joy, and we want to tear down those stigmas about stillbirth and miscarriage. And we want to, you know, help others understand grief and loss and support others who are walking those roads, you know. So some of the things, we're both creative people, and one of the things that we've done as an outlet, probably for ourselves, but also because we love the grief community and we love walking with folks that are broken and grieving, no matter what the circumstances, is that we started an Etsy shop, and we're making these glowing remembrance orbs that, for us, it was hard to go to sleep at night in the beginning. It's like you felt that loss so heavy when the distraction of the day was gone, you know? And so our orbs come on and that glowing light comes on every night again and again. It's on a timer tea light. And so it's been an outlet for us to be creative and do something together. And also it's a special treasured gift for people to have, you know, with them. So that our shop is called the Remember Shop. It's like it's one way that we're trying to live well. We've also gotten involved with the Star Legacy Foundation, who is broaching the subject of prevention. They're talking about prevention of stillbirth and pregnancy loss. Obviously, not every stillbirth is preventable, but right. some, you know, maybe like Abby's, like a cord accident. They are, and we're seeing other countries that have reduced stillbirth rates. Scotland has reduced their rate by 23%, you know, wow. and like, there's work to do. We have work to do, and we can do that. And if we can spare families from going through this, like, let's do it. Like, and so we want to be doing that, pursuing that with our lives.
Yeah.
Very good. One last thing I want to ask, and that's something I usually talk about or ask about earlier in the podcast, but I think it might be a good way to close. Is there a particular scripture or scriptures that you've kind of leaned on in your journey since Abby went to heaven?
I think for me, there's been a lot of scriptures. I think the idea that I've clung on to the most is the idea of God the Father as a bereaved dad. Always say in this group of ours that this is the club that no one wants to join, you know. And I, as I was doing some journaling, I think it was last Easter time, you know, I kind of hit me like, this is his club.
Yeah.
In some way, because we have lost our child and he has lost his, he's showing us a piece of his heart, you know, that we get to share in that, in understanding his pain and his brokenness. as a bereaved dad, and no one would ever sign up for that and right. want to take that on. But it's a beautiful thing. And when I think that nobody can understand my grief and my pain, he can.
Yeah.
You know, and that's like the thing that I've clung on to the most when I, you know, when I'm really soul searching and crying out to God.
Yeah. That's a great comfort.
And I think, you know, for me, it wasn't any particular scripture. It was even from the earliest days in the hospital. I never really thought as clearly up to that point about the impact of the brokenness of this world mm-hmm. as compared to the heart of God.
Yeah.
That what got me through the hospital, like, there was, I can't even tell you how many conversations. It was like, I don't know that I ever was angry at God through this entire process, because this is not a reflection of his heart. It's not a reflection of his nature. It's a reflection of the brokenness of this world. Mm-hmm, yeah. The only reason that this even happened is because of the brokenness of this world.
Yeah.
And so it was, I found myself in a number of occasions, like, just having to remember that, like, in my grief, in my sorrow, just like Kristen said, like, God knows intimately that the pain of loss, and he experiences it presently with us, and he yeah. journeyed all the way through that. Yeah. And I at not at any point saw God as somebody removed in any way, but quite present. And while this was a very real thing that happened, and something that at times, like, we ached for, like, God, just take it away.
Yeah.
God, just take it away. It was never in the sense, like, it wasn't in his heart, and it wasn't in his desire, and it wasn't in his creation to allow it to happen to begin with.
Yeah.
But it's because of the fallen nature that it did.
Right.
And that was, I think, something for me that, like, it carried me through. Like, this is not a reflection of God. This is a reflection of this world.
Yeah.
There is a very, very distinct difference between the two, and don't let go of that.
Yeah. Yeah. And one day this world will be completely restored mm-hmm. and we'll be Amen. With our kids again. And
we'll be very present with Abby. I'm like, it's those days when I get choked up even today. Like,
yeah,
those moments of, like, joy and of grief, recognizing she's someplace else, but she's someplace else far more beautiful.
Yes.
She's someplace else so far more amazing.
Yes.
And one day I'm going to get to join her there.
Absolutely.
And it's going to be an amazing day.
Yes.
And I look forward to that, but I'm also more than happy to wait.
Yeah. Yeah. God still has work for us to do here. We still
yeah.
have
yep.
kids to raise and things going on here, but it's great to look forward to that wonderful day that we have ahead of us.
Yep.
So. Well, thank you all so much for coming on the podcast today and just sharing your story so openly and honestly. And I know I've learned a lot just from visiting with you today. And I think probably our listeners have too. And in the show notes, I'm going to put a link to your Etsy shop so people will know where to find it. And also that the Star Legacy Foundation information, I'll put a link to that too if anybody wants to look that up and get involved. Because I think this is such an important issue. That, you know, we've talked about it all the way through this conversation, that stillbirth, miscarriage, infant loss does not get the attention, I think, in our culture that it should. And I appreciate you guys being such strong advocates for parents in your situation and for those babies.
Oh, thank you so much, Jill. It is such an honor to be able to share about our Abby, and we appreciate your support and the opportunity to share.
Yeah. Well, thank y'all. Bye-bye.
Take care.
Thank you so much for joining us on today's podcast. We hope it brought you some comfort and encouragement today and maybe made you feel a little less alone on the journey. Please subscribe so you'll never miss an episode, and maybe leave us a rating in iTunes to help others find the podcast. Again, we're glad you spent a few minutes with us today. It's a blessing to walk beside you as we seek to live well while we're waiting.